You're listening to the Reasonable Faith Virtual Chapter Podcast. In this podcast, you'll hear the audio from one of our live discussions. Please join the discussion at reasonablefaithvirtual.org. So before we get started, if you don't mind, what made you passionate about archaeology in the first place, and kind of how did you get into it, and what have you been working on most recently?
It goes back to when I was in when I was a kid in Boy Scouts years ago. I was in both the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts. I don't know if anyone else was a Girl Scout, Boy Scout, Cub Scout, but years ago I was in Cub Scouts, and fortunately my scout leaders were all big history guys. They love history, and growing up in the Deep South, I grew up in and around Memphis, Tennessee, my whole life. And one of the battlefields close by, one of the Civil War battlefields, is called Shiloh Battlefield. And my first remembrance of really having a passion for history is visiting the Shiloh Battlefield, which originally took place in April of 1862. 2 days of battle, of course, and you got about 23,000 casualties north and the south. And it's really an incredibly well-preserved battlefield. It was there that I really, really fell in love with history. Like, I wanted to know more. I wasn't satisfied with just learning and reading the stuff on the plaques. I wanted to learn more about what happened there. And so that's where it really got it started. And then I joined the U.S. Air Force and was in the Air Force for 4 years active duty. And decided toward the end of my Air Force career that I wanted to get my degree in ancient history. I was going to be a historian. And then I was actually talking to a pastor friend. He recommended, he said, well, why don't you, I know you love history, but why don't you do archaeology? Because that's really, you can really study the Bible through archaeology. And I thought, that is a brilliant idea. So I looked into it. And sure enough, the school where I was already, planning to go, had an archaeology program. And so that's kind of where I started, and that was graduated in This is in 1997, I think it was. I graduated with my undergrad in archaeology, and so I've worked in America. I've done some field work and lab work in the United States through Native American artifacts, primarily as Southwest Indian Native American artifacts. We did a survey of a national forest one time, the U.S. Forest Service, and then also I got involved processing finds, discoveries from the Lahav Research Project in southern Israel at a place called Tel Halif, in association with the school that I was attending at the time at Mississippi State University at the Cobb Institute of Archaeology. And my advisor was, I call him Jimmy Harden. His name is Dr. James Harden. He's now the director of the Cobb Institute. And he did his PhD dissertation on the Lahav Research Project. So I got a lot of lab experience as a lab processor in archaeological artifacts. And then back in 2000, maybe 2014, I get involved with an organization in Pennsylvania called the Associates for Biblical Research, ABR. And it's sort of a loose conglomeration of archaeologists around the United States and around the world. And we share our passion and bring all of our expertise and skill in the application of biblical archaeology. And so in 2014, I was assistant square supervisor for a square, which is a section of a dig in Israel, north of Jerusalem, at a place called Kirbet El Makater, which we believe is the ancient site of Ai that's mentioned in Joshua 7 and 8. And then about 5 years ago, I became involved with a project in eastern Turkey and have since become a research associate with Andrews University in Michigan. I live in Chicago. And anyway, Andrews University, we are doing a survey of far eastern Turkey on the border of Iran and Armenia and northern Iraq. And it's a pretty much an untapped area archaeologically. So we're doing some pioneer work there, and it's really amazing. And I've been involved with that for now 5 years. And so it's called the Agri Regional Survey. So that's kind of in a nutshell my experience with archaeology and what I've been doing for the past several years.
That's awesome. And so you've got a website, epicarchaeology.com?
.org. Yeah, epicarchaeology.org. Primarily, yes. And it's really has all of my sort of thinking on some of the really big questions as it relates to archaeology and the Bible. And one of the areas that really interests me is ancient literature in the Old Testament and how they're alike, how they're, you know, related, how they're different. And so I've got a couple of articles on the Epic of Gilgamesh in the Bible. I've got one on the Code of Hammurabi, and I'm working on some new stuff as well. But yeah, our website is epicarchaeology.org, and we also have a YouTube channel as well, which I need to get some more videos up there. But we have a YouTube channel, Epic Archaeology. We're also on Facebook, so people can follow us on Facebook as well, and also Instagram.
Oh, very cool. Well, we definitely appreciate you coming on tonight. If you could just give us a few words on why you think the Bible is accurate and reliable, and then we'll have a group discussion about it.
Sounds great. Well, really, I mean, this is a huge topic, obviously, and you know, for the amount of time that we have, I'll just put it this way. Really, Matt, for everybody listening, the question about this question that you ask about the reliability of the Bible. Really comes down to what I think, you know, there's a lot of things that Christians debate about and we have differences of view about. But the one thing that we all agree on, the one thing that we're united on in our belief is that we believe in the historical bodily resurrection of Jesus. That's the core truth, if you will, of Christianity, is that we believe in the historical bodily resurrection of Jesus. And obviously, we believe that from a theological standpoint, that is critically important to our salvation, and not only our salvation, but we also believe that for the salvation of everyone, we think that it is the truth that's transcendent, you know, throughout cultures and civilizations. But so that really, it really is a question of history, I think. And really, because when you look at the claim of the resurrection is primarily in the New Testament. I mean, it's in other historical writings as well, but you've got the New Testament. Of course, you've got the Gospels, and then you have also the Epistles, which are, you know, written by the Apostle Paul and also by Peter, and we have other parts of the New Testament. But all the New Testament is unanimous in its belief that Jesus rose again from the dead. So I would say that I would begin with a really, really fundamental question, and here is I'm gonna type it in there, and it's this question here: how do we know the past? And that's true not only of any claims for Christianity or any claims in the New Testament; it's true for anything in the past. How do we know Julius Caesar lived? How do we know that, you know, Napoleon Bonaparte, was defeated at the Battle of Waterloo in Belgium in 1815. How do we know that? I mean, we believe that, but how do we know it? And so it's a question of history. And so I would say, as a historian and as an archaeologist, one thing that most, you know, people who are not academics are not aware of is something called primary sources. And what is a primary source? Well, a primary source is how we know the past. We know the past through primary sources. And, you know, having been in archaeology now for quite a few years, I have a lot of students that I've had students that, you know, come up to me after class or, you know, after I speak somewhere, and they'll have a lot of really amazing ideas. But I'm like, well, what's your source? What is your, you know, what evidence do you have? One thing to say that you have a belief, that's another thing to be able to back that belief up with evidence. And so essentially, to cut to the chase, Matt, I'm going to go ahead and give the three primary sources. The first one is eyewitness testimony. Hopefully I'm spelling this right. I'm typing really fast here. I probably misspelled that. And the second one is historical records. And the third is archaeological evidence. Well, we have eyewitness testimony, historical records, and archaeological evidence. Those are really for not just for the New Testament, but for anything. Eyewitness testimony. So you have to have, in history, we have to have eyewitnesses or else we wouldn't know anything. Now, obviously, you know, there's a lot of historical inscriptions that make claims. There are some historical inscriptions and writings that claim to be written by eyewitnesses, and the New Testament is one of them. It claims to be written by eyewitnesses. So that's one thing to say that, you know, but you have to have, even if you don't believe the eyewitnesses, there has to be eyewitnesses in order to have a knowledge of the past. I mean, we are all eyewitnesses. Most of us were alive when 9/11 happened. Some people were actually in New York when 9/11 happened, so they would be an eyewitness. But there will come a day, you know, 100 years from now, in which there are no more eyewitnesses to 9/11. So the only thing that's going to be left are historical records and archaeological evidence. So when we have a record like the New Testament, we can't go and interview the eyewitnesses. The gospel writers claim to be eyewitnesses, but we can't go interview them. So the only thing that we have left are historical records and archaeological evidence. So with historical records, and there's different views on historical records. And let me say, I know I'm going really fast here, but let me just say this is a really important point I want to make. I want to make a distinction for people so that they're not, you know, led astray. There is a technical distinction between history, discipline of history per se, and archaeology. Historians study the past through historical text or historical inscriptions, whereas archaeologists study the past through artifacts. So we study the past through artifacts, whereas historians, if someone who's like a technically a historian, they will study the past through historical text. And so there are occasions in which we have archaeological discoveries that are of historical significance. They would be historical inscriptions. So there is crossover between history and archaeology. But formally speaking, there is a distinction between history per se and archaeology. Archaeology is the study of the past through artifacts. So anyway, all that to say is that when it comes to historical records, historians, and there's different schools of thought on this, but the basic idea is that historical records, what we want is we want early attestation. We want someone, an eyewitness. If we had a historical document written by an eyewitness, that would be golden. That would be perfect. We also want multiple attestation. If we have a lot of sources saying the same thing, it's probably very likely that event happened. And then also the third thing that we sort of look for when we have historical records is we want to look at enemy attestation. Or attestation that is from a sources that we wouldn't expect. So in other words, you have, in World War II, you know, you got the Allies and they're fighting Germany. Well, of course, the German historians are going to see it from a different perspective. But if they're both essentially saying the same thing in the historical records, be it from different perspectives, then it very likely happened. So we want early attestation, multiple attestation, enemy attestation. And that's exactly what we have with the New Testament. We have early attestation. The New Testament was written within the period of the eyewitnesses, and I personally believe that they were written by the eyewitnesses themselves. Some scholars will disagree about that, but I think that can be actually settled by just looking at the evidence itself, by looking at the archaeology. Archaeology can fill in the gaps for this. One little side note with the early attestation with the New Testament, we know from multiple independent sources through archaeology and through historical sources that in 70 AD, Jerusalem was sacked by the Romans and the temple was destroyed by the Roman Emperor Vespasian and his son Titus. It's in the historical record, it's in the Roman records, it's in the archaeological record. There's lots of evidence for it. What's interesting is that nowhere in the New Testament is the destruction of the temple mentioned. If it were written by people living before that, then that would make sense. So if it's written by people that live after the destruction of the temple, then they're certainly going to write about it. But they don't write about it because it had not yet happened. So what that means is that it was written before the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, so within the period of the eyewitnesses. And also you have multiple attestations. So not only do you have the New Testament making claims that Jesus rose from the dead, but you also have historians like Josephus, Tacitus, and Pliny essentially agreeing with the same set of facts, essentially that there was a Jewish teacher who performed miracles in and around Jerusalem. He was crucified by the Romans, and his disciples claimed that he rose again. Now, they're not saying, you know, they're not making a judgment claim one way or the other. They're just reporting what was going around at the time. These were major events that were happening in Jerusalem at the time. So why would Tacitus and Josephus write about these things if it were not something that really happened? And you have enemy attestation. You have people who were, again, making claims in these historical records, essentially the same thing that the New Testament writers are saying. Also with historical records, we have literally thousands and thousands of manuscripts, approximately 3,900, I think. There are 5,800 Greek manuscripts by themselves. And when you compare that with, for instance, you have other historical writings such as the Iliad, Homer by Homer, you have Plato, Aristotle, Caesar's Gallic Wars, the Annals of Tacitus, Herodotus, Livy. We know these writers from classical sources. The earliest copies that we have are written hundreds of years after those events or after those historical people. The closest one to the New Testament would be perhaps Livy, who wrote about 400 years after, or at least the manuscripts that we have of Livy are 400 years after when he lived. Whereas in the New Testament, we have copies of the New Testament that are in the first and second century AD. The earliest manuscript that we know of today is the John Rylands fragment, also called P52, was discovered in Oxyrhynchus, Egypt. It's a papyrus Greek manuscript that dates approximately to about 117 to 138 AD. And it is a passage from John chapter 18, written on papyrus. So we have an early second century copy of the New Testament that is essentially identical to what we have today. So again, we have early attestation, we have multiple sources, and we have also enemy attestation as well. In fact, Dan Wallace, who is a New Testament scholar, Greek scholar in Dallas, Texas, essentially said that he's quoting someone else, and I had somebody a couple of months ago said that they're not sure if this is true, but I double-checked it, and I'm not sure, Matt, if you've heard about this, but essentially what he said is that, I'm going to paraphrase the quote here, but you've got Peter and Paul, and you've got some of the early New Testament writers, and then you have the people who lived after them, such as like Polycarp and Ignatius and Irenaeus and things like that. Well, these are what we call the early church fathers, and they are living right after the time of when the New Testament was written. And in the church fathers, we have extensive writings of the church fathers. They're quoting from the New Testament. And essentially what the Dan Wallace quote says is that we could reconstruct the entire New Testament based on just quotations from the early church fathers. More than 1 million quotations of the New Testament by the early church fathers has been recorded. In fact, he says if all other sources for our knowledge of the New Testament were destroyed, patristic quotations alone would be sufficient for the reconstruction of practically the entire New Testament. So again, this is it's a cumulative case. It sort of builds.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Reasonable Faith Virtual Chapter Podcast. If you'd like to join the discussion, please join us at reasonablefaithvirtual.org.